So I'm going to give some introductory remarks to the water communion ritual. And they are written by words adapted from words by my UU ministerial colleague, the Reverend Eric Cherry, who served up until August as the director of our international office for many years. So he was a person who was a liaison with Transylvania and Africa and Scotland and Ireland and Mexico. And he wrote these introductory words and a whole communion for the whole international community of Unitarian Universalists. So I want us to bring that into the room today, that we are more than just Auburn, you know. We're more than just Alabama. We're more than the United States. We're a whole family of Unitarian Universalists, many of whom now do this watering gathering. This morning we carry love and hope and courageous faith and seek to renew our commitments to each other. We remind ourselves of the home that we share here, a home that we come back to, whether after a long or short or no absence, a home we welcome all to make their own. So we gather ritually here this morning, carrying gifts of our summer, and either we're carrying them or we're symbolically sharing them, of the water that we have been present with and which has been present to us. Now, these symbols of water may call to mind light summer showers, not a lot of those this year, pop-up southern thunderstorms and flash floods, humid, dewy mornings with their crickets and cicadas, or moments at ocean sides, pool sides, river sides, lake sides, and who we were while we were there, even if we were there alone. Perhaps we found ourselves in the presence of water during a moment of grief, of birth, of rebirth. Did the water's resiliency inspire you, or its serenity, maybe its waxing and waning tides, the music of its motion, the silence of its sleep? When you were by water, wherever the water was, did you feel the interdependent web of existence coming alive for you in those moments? Some of you might have had the gift of a momentary epiphany around water. Others of you, a growing awareness of how this very water is like the strands of the web, and how the web is us and everything. We've got peace like a river, we've got peace like a river, we've got peace like a river in our souls. We've got peace like a river, we've got peace like a river, we've got peace like a river in our souls. So I loved all the stories. Weren't they amazing? Just a combination. So if you can hang in, I can do a homily. Like, are you ready to hang in a little bit? So I don't know how close to like 12 o'clock people are, but 11, sorry, 11. So it's okay. We still have time. Okay. I'm still on what is that time you told me that's like, yeah, that's the one. Okay. We have lived in the South, me and my husband, for 25 years now, where I've loved the surprising, colorful, leafy autumns and the exquisite dogwood and azalea blossom springs. And I have tolerated the mostly just chilly, but sometimes paralyzing and precarious icy winter days we get here. But I have hated the summers. The humidity that creeps in early May, the ways the days get hotter here towards dinner time instead of cooling off, it's enough to send this near native Californian back home by mid-July. Nah, by mid-June. That's when my half-full husband, you know what I'm talking about, like half-full, begins what I see as his annual charade, telling me that fall actually starts when the kids go back to school. Which, when we first moved here, was in mid-August. Mid-August, with no air conditioning in the elementary school classroom that our second grader Ben sweltered in, until the temperatures actually started to go down That was sometime much later on in September, long after Labor Day. Still, I swear that yesterday morning on our dog walk, there was a cooling low cloud layer and some unmistakable yellow leaves in trees that looked like they were actually turning. So perhaps my husband, who's not here today, is on to something. Nature has been fooled some. Now that the schools in our town start August 1st, and yours started August 8th, right? With a fall vacation already scheduled there, only a week or two after the schools in the eastern towns, where there are a plethora of steepled Unitarian Universalist congregations that are just beginning to be back in session. So they're already going on their fall break, and these schools just started. When it's perhaps temperate enough to open those schoolhouses after 3 months of prudent energy saving, and at the same time to reopen the church buildings that traditionally always have been locked down from Memorial Day to September. Now, it isn't so true anymore. Many of them do stay open sort of all year, and I want to tell a little sentence about my visit to New York City. Thank you for asking me. So the last time, the only time I ever went to All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Manhattan was on Easter Sunday, okay? Easter Sunday, really high church, really big sanctuary, and the pipe organ. It was amazing. And then I got invited this summer to preach there last weekend. And I was picturing that, a big sanctuary, the pipe organs, you know, it was kind of intimidating. Oh no, we arrived there last Sunday morning, about an hour ahead of time, and I was pointed down into the basement. The basement, where they turned it into sort of a worship space, a fellowship hall during the summer. It is very musty there, and all of the musicians wear flip-flops and t-shirts and shorts. It's very cash, and there were about 150, 200 people there. So that's so much for my big trip to New York City All Souls congregation. But that is very typical. They will open. Oh, and I wanted to show my son the sanctuary. No, they do not open up in the summer until after Labor Day. So he had to imagine that it was actually as majestic a place as I had recalled. So sooner or later, we Unitarian Universalists open up our congregations for in-gatherings, which is usually timed with the time that we send our children off with their new shoes and their new superhero and heroine lunch boxes and their new crayons. That is when we in-gather in our congregations. Yet in most of the Unitarian churches in our earlier years, this start of what we still call the church year, the start of the church year, was never celebrated with any kind of special worship at all. The doors were sort of unceremoniously thrown open and routine was assumed. In her archival study of old church bulletins, which is a really good way of finding out our history, UU historian Susan Ritchie noted that the minister had returned from his vacation by the sea, perhaps with a special fall sermon series that was given birth from his beach time revitalization. But these motherland New England services, she says, bore no relationship at all to what we have today. Number one, in time they were much later, and in temperature they anticipated a different kind of weather than you can imagine for Auburn, Alabama. So I'm going to read you something called The Winds of Summer. I don't know if you've ever used that as an in-gathering reading. It's in our gray hymnal, and you see if you can relate to it at all. Quote, "We come together in this time and in this place on the bridge of autumn. Summer is fading backward into memory, and winter waits in snowy brilliance." In Auburn, Alabama, on August 19th, not hardly. Indeed, the tradition of ingathering has morphed over time from simply a starting date with little or no ceremony to what has been described as a modern hybrid of harvest festivals and collegiate homecoming traditions. Now that's something you can relate to, okay? But an in-gathering centered around what we have come to call our water communion, which we just did, the ritual of bringing and sharing water in a common vessel, happened much later, really quite recently in UU historical terms. And it all began with the women. It all began with the women, and it's absolutely linked with our own UU involvement in gender justice, both inside and outside our walls. It began in, and I want you to imagine, think about what date you think it is here. It began in 1975 with one lay woman, Lucille Shuck Longview, who had just gone to that big gathering of women internationally in Mexico City, came back really excited, saying she believed that getting at the religious roots of sexism was what she called a great untouched area in our liberal denomination. Untouched. We hadn't dealt with it. While we had previously passed three resolutions in our General Assembly about the inclusion of women in professional ministry and other institutions, kind of an affirmation of equal opportunity, there had never been a resolution addressing the underlying role of religious myths and practices in perpetuating women's secondary status in both religion and society, how our own single-gendered worship services, the language in our hymns, in our prayers, in our readings, were simply unacceptable. Much seemingly insurmountable at times work had to be done, beginning with studying our own culpability in perpetuating religious patriarchy and the necessity of at least revisiting the principles and purposes that we had written in 1961, which used male-gendered language exclusively to express the concerns and dignity of mankind, and it completely omitted a source of our tradition very dear to many women and other people, and that is earth-centered tradition and the notion of the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And which principle is that? Seven. It didn't exist. It did not exist in 1975. It was nowhere to be seen, nor any consciousness of environmental justice or of healing Mother Earth. None of that was there. It would take a decade to finally pass a resolution that would accomplish this and other changes, with only one audible dissenting vote, finally, at the General Assembly in 1985. It took 10 years to do these changes. The path from one laywoman's call for change for women in our movement, for an embrace of diverse feminisms, was long and difficult, and it was marked by countless meetings. Don't we do those well? And conversations, and worship services. And all of this is feminist principle, by the way, so I'm really not making fun. Meetings and conversations and worship around an issue is a feminist principle that have been described as profound spiritual explorations of sought-after transformations. The first water ritual was part of one such service, coming home like rivers to the sea, which was designed for the UU Women and Religion Continental Convention in, of all places, East Lansing, Michigan, in 1980. Not by the Mississippi River, the Tuolumne River, the Hudson River, whatever. I don't even know the water by East Lansing. I'm sorry, I don't know if there's water. I'm sure there is. This worship that birthed our present-day water ceremonies was designed by Lucy Shuck Longview and Carolyn McDade. And how is she familiar to us? She wrote Spirit of Life, arguably our Unitarian Universalist national anthem. Hear them describe what she sought to create, they created. The water ceremony became the central part of a religious service that broke with tradition in significant ways. We gathered in worship in a way that was authentic and liberating to us, not as a church, but in a semicircle around a large common earthen bowl. It was a ritual of women being connected by a universal symbol, water, a ritual of women being connected with the totality of life. Making our way like rivers from places distant and near, we came together to give shape to a new spirituality, a theology that rather than instructing us as individuals to be strong, called on us to be strong in support of other people, that called us to action rather than passivity, and called us to the full expression of our humanness. That was the beginning of the water communion that we do here today. We came to create, they said, and to celebrate and to live by the only spirituality worthy of our devotion, a spirituality that uplifts and empowers and connects us all. So it began with the women, but it goes on with all of us. No matter what gender, no matter no gender, a people gathering. May it be so today. So I want you to join us in our final hymn, our second hymn, which is 1064 in your teal hymnal, Blue Boat Home. And by the way, when I started as a little girl in UU, the big hit hymn was We Will Be One. And then it became Spirit of Life. And this past year, the top 10 was headed up by Blue Boat Home. This has now become the singular most popular hymn in our movement. So with that in mind, I invite you to rise in body or spirit.